With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
2-1 up about half time. Lose the game 3-2. That is all.
You're listening to Acton Law, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to the number one court of the Old Bailey for today's post-mortem on Bristol beating Mill by 3-2. Joining me is our lead coroner, Mr. Michael Avery. How are you, Michael?
Happy New Year, listeners. Thanks for having me back on, Nick.
Good to have you, mate. Good to have you in the court. And you're also joining us is the Lord High Executioner himself, Mr. Harold Warren. How are you doing, H?
Hear ye. You stand in front of us charged with throwing away a 2-1 lead at half time. How do you plead?
I have to confess, dear listeners, a repeat offender sits in the chair of this podcast at Peterborough Boys. I think I said to Mike Hayden at the half-time break, we shouldn't lose from here, Mike, should we? And lo and behold, what happened? We lost from there. And today, I confess my sins to you all. I wrote at half-time that I hesitate to say it, but the Lions are set fair and shouldn't be losing this one from here. And lo and behold, what happens? Twice over, we give up winning positions at half time. Mike, can I start with you, mate? I mean, that was as a second half performance. That was very, very poor. I think I'm trying to be. We're recording this, listeners, in the immediate aftermath of the game, so I'm trying to pick my words carefully, not go overboard with it. But that was one of the poorer performances in the second half of the season, given the circumstance. How did you see it, mate?
Yeah, I think considering how the first half went, where I think Bristol City had some moments in the first half where they had like little purple patches, if you can say that. But I don't think they ever really, apart from the goal, obviously, I don't think they ever really troubled us. We were clearly the better team in the first half, I thought. Yes, we scored 2 goals. And apart from that, there might not have been that much more evidence to show it for actual clear-cut chances. But I did think the way we passed the ball, moved the ball quite nicely in the first half. I think leading up to our goal, there was a movement. We had about 10, 15 passes linked up. But that second half, considering how good the first half was absolutely appalling, wasn't it? And I just think it just fell apart. I really, really did. I was just, as I just said, appalling. I was thinking, is that too strong a word? But no, I don't think it was. For a team who's 2-1 up to completely fold the way we did, I don't think was really acceptable. And I don't know about you guys as well, but there was a lot of times that we were going down very softly looking for fouls, wasn't there? And I know it was a little bit both ways, but there was a lot of times we were losing the ball. And as we went to play a pass or misplace a pass, we'd sort of go down. And as we're halfway down, looking for the ref to try and get us out of trouble because we know we'd be under the cosh again. And that's not normally how we play. And that's not normally how teams play when they're 2-1 up at half-time in the driving seat.
Harry, let me put to you a pre-match tweet by Jake Sanders. Shout out to Jake. Just as a kind of a plea for the defence of Gary Rowett. Millwall forced to play for a second time in 5 days with just 13 outfield players, 2 teenagers, one of which is 15-year-old. That's Zach Lovelace, of course, and Nana Boateng, I think, was the other boy on the bench. And only able to name 6 substitutes. Absolutely no fuss made. Premier League clubs take note, says Jake. But that point is, to some extent, do you accept it's relevant in that poor second half performance that we, COVID has decimated the squad that's available to Gary Rowett?
Are you buying that? Are you buying that?
Yeah, yes, to an extent, but then it doesn't mitigate. I'm talking really legal now, listeners, aren't I? It doesn't mitigate the poor choices and the appalling performance that we saw from a certain number of players. I mean, I'll name him. I thought George Evans was an absolute shambles. He was extremely poor. We'll come back to him in a little bit, but it's a truth we're lacking our best players. I mean, I'm meaning Jed Wallace at the end of the day.
Yeah, my point is that you can only name six subs. You're telling me every single player at the club from under 18 level upwards, there's not one player. You're telling me that's true? Because if that is true, that makes a mockery of COVID, and you kind of need to come out and say that.
I don't know what Ben's situation is at the moment. I mean, you know, right, if we are down to the bare bones, is he affected by COVID? We don't know.
Are 3 points more important than playing Bob Varson or having Bob Varson on the bench or Ben Thompson on the bench to fill a position on the bench, right?
Well, they're valid questions.
Are the 3 points worth more? Or are the relationships behind the scenes strained to a point where Ben Thompson, John Daddy Bob Varson and Conor Mahoney will never play for this club again, which I think is the case, right? So if we're at that level, then that's it. That's his making because he picks the squad. He's decided who's in the group, who's out of the group, who's included, who isn't included. So, you know, you reap what you sow. At the end of the day, we were all right at 2-1. I thought we'd done, you know, the other night.
We've done very well at halftime.
The other night at Coventry, we kept it tight. We nicked it. This was a lot more open, a lot more of an open game. But Ojo had his best game in a Millwall shirt. Didn't do amazing things.
I thought Ojo was impressive today. I thought he did well.
Really, really simple things well. Like when he picked the ball up, he drove at players, made them make decisions on whether to bring him down or not. Won us possession, got us up the pitch, played in a phobie for the penalty. Done really well, had another chance in the second half. Looked tired, admittedly. But you change him for George Evans. And again, this links back to the thing I've been saying all season. This is his squad. He signed George Evans rather than signing another, you know, I saw a name mentioned from someone on Twitter, then Barry Bannon from Sheffield Wednesday or other players that teams have picked up. You know, this is all wages and resource. And you can't slag the previous management off for Babarson, Thompson and Mahoney and so on without slagging this manager off for his decisions in recruitment. And it all comes back to squad management. And I don't think we've managed a squad well, which Aaron touched upon in the pods that he's been on. And it all reaped itself in the second half when you have down to the bare bones is that he's a defensive manager who can't defend. The stat from the Sky bloke, we've won 3 games away from home all season. One of them was at Coventry.
Yeah,
Bristol City had only won 3 games at home all season. They are not a good side, you know? And it just shows we are so mediocre, so middle of the road, and that's all we will ever be under this manager, I'm afraid.
I mean, on the back of a good performance, Mike, up at Coventry, I mean, I think that was a good performance. I mean, you know, yeah, we can... You defend and then you nick a goal and you win. That's the classic away performance. So that left everyone, I think, feeling on and up. And at the end of that first half, I mean, it was an open game, but I genuinely thought we shouldn't lose it from there. But lo and behold, we did. Now that was possibly because we're running out of steam a little bit. As a certain number of players, I didn't think Ojo was the player to take out of the game today. And I don't understand some of these decisions. We don't know also, we're not privy to the behind the scenes. We don't know what Bob Varson and Ben Thompson, and I think Mahoney is injured, so he may not be available. But let's go back to Ben and to John Daddy, as much as we might laugh at John Daddy. I mean, you'd be on the bench, wouldn't he? I mean, I don't understand, unless they're COVID positive, I don't understand why they're not involved in today's game, a trip to Bristol City. Tough game.
Yeah, and especially when you've got the likes of John Daddy and Mahoney Moore, they'll be on substantially more wages. So you've literally got to put, you've got a player there that even from a financial point of view, you're paying a lot of money to sit there if he's all right and not got COVID or anything like that, just to sit indoors. I remember Kenny Jackett always used to do it, didn't he? When I remember a time he loaned out Lenny Pidgley So I think it was to Dover or something like that, but then recalled him because it's like, well, I'm not going to pay your wages till you be somewhere else. I'm more in your camp, Nick, where I think that COVID, I think, and sort of injuries have ravaged the side a lot more. And although he was poor today, you think before the game, this was pretty much the same side that went up to Coventry and everyone was saying what a great job that team did. So,
yeah.
In Rowett's defence, if you've got a team that's down to its bare bones already but has proved it's done well, until it needs fixing, don't break it, don't change it.
Didn't change it. That's the point. They were fine at 2-1 until he touched it. He touched it and broke it. That was the point. They were seeing the game out at 2-1, not brilliantly, but they were still winning the game.
No, I don't think we were seeing the game out well, Harry. Even at 2-1, I think the start of the second half, Bristol City were a better side.
They picked it up after half time, Michael.
He made two changes at half time, Pearson. Their manager makes two changes. They affect the game positively for them.
Yeah.
Our manager makes one change and brings it or fucks it up. That's the difference. And I don't like what we do. What we decide to do as a football club for the last probably 2 or 3 years, we're very reactive in the sense that we try to set ourselves up to react to the opposition. We don't go and enforce our will upon the game. We don't go, and that's not just in this game, because obviously we are depleted with COVID or whatever, but it is a running trait that we react to opposition. We never go, Mill, I don't know what our fucking style of play is. I couldn't tell you what a Millwall style of play is because we don't have one. What our style of play is, let's see what the opposition do and we'll try and cope with that and maybe nick a goal. That is our style of play, right? There is no style of play from, you know, 1 week to the next. When we put the ball in for Bradshaw, this is another point. How fucking good is it to have a striker that if you put a ball in the box, around the 6-yard box, he scores and he's always there? You know, that's kind of an important thing. So maybe play to that, give him the service and he scores. How long did I hear this season, Bradshaw's shit? Bradshaw's shit. He's not shit. His goal scoring record at other clubs has been decent. So play to him. We start playing to him and he scores. That's it. He nearly scored with an header that was a ridiculous half chance that he nearly got in at the end of the half. He's in a form of life, the poor man, and he's living on scraps.
It's run through the goals. I mean, I think you said, Michael, that Bristol had some good... I thought we closed Bristol out very well in the first half. I'm just looking at my own notes, and I've got one chance for them on 20. Other than that, not much, to be really honest, in that first half, at least. Sloppy opening goal, boys. I mean, obviously that was we were being pressed high all game, and they forced an opportunity which was actually put away quite nicely. That was a shot from distance, wasn't it? You can talk about Mill sloppiness there, but to some extent these things do happen in games of football, don't they? I mean, mistakes are made early in the game when players are cold. It was an avoidable error, shouldn't have been made, but 1-0 down, I thought we did well to start making a comeback from there. And as you say, Harry, a beautiful cross. I mean, that was a beautiful cross from Murray Wallace for that equalising goal, and brilliantly put away by Tom Bradshaw from close there.
Yeah, I mean, the goal, their goal, early doors, is, again, I don't think, you know, it's not a first chart. It's not the first choice back three. It's not the first, you know, very much not the first choice back three, let alone when you've got Alex Pearce and Hutchinson, who I don't think necessarily play very well together. I think you've got two contradicting leadership voices there, shall we say.
Yeah.
Because I think Hutchinson's used to leading the line, and I think Pearce wants to drop and Hutchinson wants to push, and that's sort of what happened there from my memory. And then Bart's just spooned one out. I mean, let's be honest, Bart can have one because the amount of stuff that he does right for us.
Well, in this game, he's saved a couple of shots on goal later, you know, so there we are.
So you can't really be too harsh. Yeah, we shouldn't be 1-0 down, but we are. But the way they responded from that point was very positive, very good. And Murray Wallace hangs across that. I mean, it was such a good cross because it hangs. That's like, that's if you're going to try and say, where do I want to put a cross from that position? So the keeper can't cut. It's like in cricket, they call it your corridor of uncertainty, don't they? It's like the goalkeeper can't come for that, because if he comes for that, he's judged underneath the ball and so on. And Bradshaw does what Bradshaw's been doing. And
he puts it away. He puts it away with aplomb in front of goal.
I think with Bradshaw as well, chaps, I don't know about you, but with that goal, I'm not necessarily sure about with the camera angle with Bristol City's red button coverage, but straight away he's looked over at the linesman, hasn't he, when he scored to see if he was offside. And then there was, I think there was a couple of times in the second half where obviously the way the camera follows the ball, he looked like he was offside. But the fact there was no line, I think a mention is, as we talk about his work off the ball and his actual work rate, and he chases balls down, and sometimes that was a criticism as to why he might not be in the right position. But I think there's got to be a mention today of how well he read that line and led that line today, Bradshaw, because there was a lot of times where a few years back, if you had assistant referees who weren't up to the level, they'd quite easily put a flag up to sort of get himself out of trouble. But I think he was superb, like leading the line today and knowing when to time his run well.
Just to hold on Tom Bradshaw for a sec, Harry, just to, before we move along. I mean, obviously you can't do anything but admire 5 goals, I think, in 5 appearances. And I well remember when he first signed, it was under Neil Harris, he first signed, and it was kind of like the Lee Gregory was moving back up north and Tom Bradshaw was the obvious replacement. Morrow was coming towards the end of his time, but, you know, that was going to be the new source of our goal scoring. And it's taken a while, and it's been a bit of a story for Tom Bradshaw to get to this point, but I mean, Harry, I can start to see now the player that Neil signed back then, because, as you say rightly, give him the right service, he will do the business in front of goal. And that's, you know, that's a very rare quality at Millwall.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people forget that he got a serious career-threatening injury when he came and joined us. So that takes it out of anyone. I think he's taken a long time. We've had a change of management that might not necessarily suit the way that he plays, and that's clear, because he's coming to his own. He comes into his own when we're putting crosses into the box, something that we don't do very often under Gary Rowett. And, I don't know what to make of this run of form. Like, it's so good and it's so out of nowhere. But, like, it's literally, you think everything at the moment, his movement's so good. Like, touching on what Michael was saying, there was a chance, I think it's still at 2-1. And he literally is looking up. George Evans had just come on, so I noted down another misplaced George Evans pass.
I've noted that a few times as well.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Imagine my shock. Right, and all Evans had to do. There seems to be a confusion around our midfielders. That it's not just George Evans, but Afobe and Bradshaw want you to put the ball in the channel. They want you to put that ball in behind. They want to go and do the work. They want to go and chase that ball because they'll get you possession. They don't want it to feet. They're not necessarily gifted with close touch control. Like Bradshaw's, sometimes the ball hits his foot and it goes fucking 4 yards in front of him. That's not his game. His game is put it in the box. I'll get there and I'll get it goalwards. And then whatever happens, you know, I've got half a shot. Afobe's the one that is sort of the more skillful of the two, but again, not massively blessed with great sort of technical ability in the terms of his touch. But today, they both work their bollocks off, and literally, it must be so soul destroying for them two strikers to literally run your bollocks off in 2 games now. Well, Bradshaw's played definitely all 2, and I know Afobe finished the other one, but you know, that I feel sorry for him because he's doing his job. His job is being done. The offensive side now is being done, but we're still leaky as a sieve at the back.
Well, yeah, I mean, the midfield is an issue, isn't it? Midfield's an issue because, I mean, just before we move on from that point, Mike, I saw Bradshaw a couple of times pointing, and I think he was digging players out in midfield because he wanted the ball, as Harry's just said, played to suit him and his game. And I think Afobe was doing the same. I get they're both senior players. They're both of a certain age and stature, so they can start to demand what they want. But it's great to see that. I love it. Yeah, great to see it. Sorry, Mike,
I was just going to say, you were saying about Afobe's game. You know, we've been saying about Afobe all season. It's a little bit like a broken record, like from the fan base as a whole, that's how he likes to play. But just to compliment him as well, I mean, I remember a time in the second half where someone's done the usual, absolutely punted the ball up to Afobe. He's leapt in the air, brought it down with his chest, controlled it, and then laid it off. And you think, for a player that's not his natural game, to be asking him to do that kind of thing, again, I think that deserves a mention. I think that both players, as you say, Harry, had a great game today, both up front. And it is that thing, you go away from home, score 2, both your strikers score, and you walk away with absolutely nothing because of your sieve-like defending, as you say. But when we do move on, I think we do need to. You said about the first goal being sloppy, Nick, but I think the third goal was equally as sloppy. There was a few chances to get rid of that, weren't there?
Yeah, there were. Yeah, I mean, we'll come back to the set. I just want to, before we leave the first half behind, listeners, I'm trying to desperately focus on the positive here for you.
Danny Mack was good. That's a positive.
Danny Mack was good. I thought Shay Ojo played one of his better games. And what I would love, if he's listening, I don't know if he listens to the show.
Almost certainly not. I think we're very much banned around the club. Mr. GR will not want to hear this one.
The problem is, Harry, the amount of clubs he's been loaned to, he's got all of them in his podcasts. Listen to this on like Thursday or Friday.
I can't believe in this. In this travelogue of previous clubs that Shay's been to, in amongst all the wealth of football experience and knowledge that he must have touched on, he's come from Liverpool. Let's not forget that. Someone somewhere along the line will maybe have said what I'm going to say to him. I want to see him start to get a little bit arrogant, a little bit selfish on the ball, start to do stuff, start to try stuff, show a bit of confidence. That ball from Ojo to Findafobi that won the penalty was a beautiful ball. I mean, you said right, you got it right, Harry. I mean, it wasn't Ojo's best ever performance. It wasn't earth shattering, but you got a little hint of what a good player he could be if only he started to really be confident in his own skills and show it. And B, maybe he's got to say a bit of a fuck you to the world. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and hopefully it works. If it doesn't, well, he's no worse off than he is right now.
You get loaned to Millwall when it doesn't work out. Where is there really for you to fucking go?
I don't know. From Liverpool? I don't know. You're going to go down to League One. Yeah.
You've got to ask that question. He does have a touch. He has a touch of the threads about him, doesn't he?
Yeah, there is a touch.
You understand what I mean? Like, it's a bit like, you're a bit lightweight, but there is a player in there, but can I get that player out? There is a touch of that. And
I mean, he's at a point in his career. I mean, like, as with Fred, Michael, really, I mean, Fred reached the same stage where if you're not going to show it now, I mean, maybe he saw Luton play the other week and he looked all right, Fred. But, you know, you always had this sense he could be a lot better than what he's displaying. And I think Ojo's out of that kind of same stable, really. So as we've said, I mean, half time 2-1, and I wrote the fateful words down. We shouldn't be losing this from here, but lo and behold, we do. Because as you said, Harry, Nigel Pearson, who's an immensely experienced manager at a high level, made a couple of changes, and they came out firing all cylinders, didn't they? And we really were on the back foot for certainly the early stages of the half. But we're still leading up until you know the equaliser on 72. We were still leading. But it was, you know, ends a stage right, George Evans. And you know, I don't like to particularly coat him, but you've got to say what you see. And I thought he was very, very, very poor today. I don't know if he's suffering with COVID.
He's been well. Fucking, I was going to say something that was irretrievable, so I won't say that. But he has been shit in the two last games. He doesn't work in the midfield with Mitchell at all.
No.
They don't work at all together. The game at Peterborough, he played the midfield three of Saville, Mitchell and Evans, and it didn't work. Right? Played them again. In the 20 minutes, we conceded two goals and threw away a 2-1 lead, right? Now, I know needs must, but George Evans isn't a natural centre defensive midfielder. Billy Mitchell, I don't think is. I think he plays there for us. But I don't think he's naturally like a sitting and a holding player because he likes kind of turning and having time on the ball to play a pass. He can do it, but I don't think it's his natural game.
He's a little bit free roll, Mitchell, isn't he? He's not your attacker. Not free roll in the sense you can do the Jed Wallace and just do anything. You'd want him in that midfield, but he's like be a little ball terrier, isn't he? Just go around nip ankles and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, he does. He does all the link play really well. He does the simple things really well, keeps your possession. Yeah. I can totally understand a sort of more mobile Ryan Woods. I totally get it, right? That's fine, which is what my criticism of Ryan Woods was, that he was fucking useless, right? At least Mitchell, you know, can put a challenge in every now and then.
My criticism was he was useless.
Right, that's it. Fair enough, right? And Saville is supposedly a more advanced midfielder in the sense that he is supposedly an attacking link man. Now, you can ask questions about what the fuck he was doing when he went forward later on and looked like I think he had the easiest pass in the world to slot it in at, I think it was 2-2 at the time, and squared it and it didn't put enough on it. But the fact of the matter is that midfield three is dysfunctional. And he chose to make that decision to make that dysfunctional. Now, the other night, he brought Malone on for Ojo.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know we don't know how fit Malone is. We don't know how fit a lot of these players are, but that decision you know, managers are judged on these decisions, and that decision won us the game in the sense that we didn't lose from where we were. Today, he's made the decision, and we've lost from where we are. So you have to criticize when he gets it wrong.
You take the plaudits and you get the brickbats when it comes your way. And the substitution of Ojo, I can see why managers substitute Shay Ojo, because he's that kind of substitutable player, isn't he? You know, he's the kind of the kind of away with the fairies, creative
kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, Evans was poor. Listen, I mean, we've said it before. Saville, I mean, post game, I was looking online, he's getting slaughtered online for another performance, a poor performance. Evans beaten to the punch for the equaliser, though. I mean, that was a decent crossing from the left. But if you don't make those challenges inside the 6 yard box, chaps, you're going to get concede goals, and that's how you find yourself not achieving top six status, because you're giving away goals like that. And I thought, you got to put that on George Evans's account. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah. It's to say it again. It sounds like we're sort of going around in circles, but he's still, you still don't know what your best midfield is. You say about Evans there, Saville. I wouldn't say Saville was unbelievably poor today, but I thought he was very drifted in and drifted out of the game. There were times when I think the only time I knew he was there was like when I said to you guys, sort of like in our little chat, when I, that the commentator who clearly just wanted to fill airtime decided to give us a breakdown of every move that George Saville had in his career.
You want to play a tenner for I Follow, boys? You get much better commentary on there.
Ah, you don't want to do that.
And
HD quality images as well. That's the other thing.
If
I didn't spend so much on Christmas presents, I would have done the tenner. Saville.
Oh dear.
Again, he's just not. You don't. Ryan say Leonard is our best player, is he?
Ryan Leonard is our best midfielder, and we've been playing him at right back all year. Slate of this, right? And
he's got his feet up at the moment, though, chap.
Injured, isn't he? You've got to take that away from him. You've got Kifton, like, again, squad wise, Kifton Bell, Thompson, Evans, Mitchell, fucking Saville, right? There's five centre midfielders there. There's five that I've just named off. I haven't even thought of anyone else. I don't even think I named Leonard. So that's six. You can't have this many centre midfielders and then moan at me in the same fucking breath that you've got no squad depth. It's your fucking job, mate.
You can't have that many midfielders. I take the point, listeners, that COVID has affected our squad at the moment. But I mean, we've not looked brilliant in midfield all season. You can't have that many midfielders and look so wishy-washy. And, you know, I mean, it's a repeat point that's being made that we win well at Coventry, and we did very well up there. Left a real kind of sense of maybe now the railway train is finally rolling, and now within a couple of yards, it's come off the tracks again. You know, how many times has that happened?
The thing is, as well, if you've got that many midfielders or in other any position, really, you would think that you would, just in a way to keep everyone happy, pack out that position, wouldn't you? In the sense that if you've got, like you say there, Harry, five, six centre midfielders, you would play a regular 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2. Or if you had like four centre forwards, you'd play like a 4-2-1-3 or something where you are very top heavy. But like you say, for a side who's got on paper so many gifted and talented midfielders, which on paper they are, you can't deny that, to be so poor and so inconsistent and not know what they do. And like we said, the second goal, the equaliser that actually brought Bristol City back in the game, come from a midfield error.
I thought that was a very poor goal to concede, Michael. Yeah. I mean, they were talking about the boys were talking about what a good cross and what a well-finished move it was. And yes, it was. But I'm still looking at George Evans. I've gone over him as a personal hate figure tonight, listeners, on that. Who's let the man beat him inside the 6 yard box? And that, you know, give any player a chance inside six, he's going to have a strong chance of scoring. Moments later, I thought Alex Pearce really dodged the bullet. There was he was beaten for pace. Was it Semenya? Was that the player that was doing? Doing damage down the middle for Bristol.
Just a lump forward, wasn't it? Just like a hump clearance.
And he got beat for pace, Harry, but then he grabbed hold of it. I thought, well, you're going to have to go for that. You know, but somehow the The referee was poor.
He bottled the red card for them because it was last man, so it should have gone in the first half for the pen.
But I mean, talk about dodge a bullet there.
Well, I mean, that's it. The referee was poor for both sides. We got away with one by Pierce not being sent off. They got away with one with their guy not being sent off for the pen in the first half. But again, Alex Pierce is not first choice. And Alex Pierce, in my opinion, although he did have a very good game, a solid game away at Coventry, a team that haven't scored in God knows when, looking at their fans' forums and so on, and they're moaning about their manager, considering the fact they were second earlier on in the season or something like that. So they're on a bad run of form. He played very well. But then this is what I don't like about Alex Pierce, is that he's not consistent. And to do it consistently at the championship level, he can no longer do that. That is not a knock on him.
He's a professional footballer, and that's his downfall.
Yeah, he does think he's professional.
Alex Pierce, I thought in midweek up at Coventry, he led well, because I think you have to be, you go by what you see, listeners. And I thought he led us very well on Wednesday night. And today there was no leadership at all when we needed it most, when things were starting to go a bit square on us in that second half. There was no on field person. So I don't know what happened between Wednesday and what's today, Sunday? The endless
new
Christmas
year.
Period.
New year. That's right. New year.
So I don't know where he went. But anyway, there we are. Then there was the penalty shout that we should have had on 83. It's all Saville bursting into the box, and it looked a pretty clear penalty from watching the eye follow, but we didn't get it. And then didn't he feed a phobia? And he put it wide.
He did feel the phobia, but he had already been fouled. He sort of fed a phobia as a last sort of parting gesture as the ball's rolling away from him. And I think maybe from behind the goal, why he's getting slated is, I wonder if people couldn't see the how bad that challenge was. He didn't try and play that pass. That's what he
got forced into.
Yeah. It was a bad challenge. It should have been a pen, but
I've picked out a few tweets after the game to slate George Saville. I won't go to town on them, but George Evans and some George Saville ones as well. And then obviously ping pong. I've written down ping pong for the goal 3-2, and this is where it was bouncing around their own penalty area, and then slammed home by the Bristol striker. There was a hat trick. Was it Wyman?
Wyman.
Andreas
Wyman.
With that Wyman, all jokes aside, you don't let a player of that quality like have shots like that or have a second, third bite.
You shouldn't do. Not without conceding goals, Mike.
Was he their top goal scorer all season? He had 9 before the game. He's got 12 now. So we've, basically added a quarter of his goal tally in one afternoon. Mm.
My villain
masterclass from our defensive minded manager.
I'm going to come on to man of the match. My villain of the piece was George Evans, but others might have selected Saville. But my man of the match, I was torn between Tom Bradshaw and Murray Wallace, because I thought Murray put in a pretty good performance today for the cross and the general kind of Murray Wallace performance. Who would you go for, Michael? Who's your man of the match today, mate?
I'd probably say Murray Wallace. He's just solid, and he doesn't let you down. And even when it all seems to be going a bit wrong, he's the only one who seems to be doing it right.
Yeah. What about who'd you go for?
Yeah, probably Murray Wallace. Murray Wallace strikes me as the kind of man who would be like, they'd do a biopic if he was in the war. Very like stoic, looking out to sea, sort of naval captain. Murray Wallace leading in troops to battle.
Serve.
Yeah. It's like when you can keep your head while all of those around you are losing their type thing. He's very, he's us. Like he fits the club perfectly. And if Bradshaw keeps scoring, almost certainly he'll win player of the year. But big shout out to Murray Wallace of
it'll be a deserving candidate.
If he was like an under-10s kid footballer, he'd be given the sort of trophy for like the most improved. That you've got to give him a trophy for something because someone else is
clubman of the year.
He'd be the best footballer at our school. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. It's the thing in the first half as well. He makes mad sort of. He's running. He's fucking unbelievable.
He's a very, very fit bloke.
There was a chance in the first half, so the guy tried to knock it round him, and Murray Wallace went, "Yeah, all right, you can knock it round me, but I'm going to fucking run past you for this ball." And he literally went the wrong side of him, like he was going round the 25 and fucking come and got it. And I was like, but that's what he gives you. He gives you all that effort. And if everyone put in half the effort that Murray Wallace puts in, we'd fucking be a lot higher up in the table sometimes, because that's what I expect off everyone. You know what I mean? Not everyone can
absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely.
That should be the bare minimum.
I'll tell you what as well, though. You just saying that, Harry, about like sort of early on you were saying about sort of mediocre mid-table football. Do you, without, I know we're only in January and we've got a cup to look forward to and all that, but what do you reckon? Do you reckon that's the season over now,
Are you looking forward to the cup? That's a serious question. Are you looking forward to next week?
It's a day out. It's the cup, innit? I always look forward to the cup.
That is exactly it. It will be a day out for Crystal Palace and their arts and crafts department. They will turn up. Yeah. Their arts and crafts department will be very happy. They'll make some kind of banner. ITV are there. There'll be some kind of incident. And we'll be talking about, we won't even remember this result this time next week. We'll be talking about some kind of incident. We'll be, no we'll doubt will happen.
Guilty in the court of the nation next week, won't we? We'll do something.
Absolutely. But no, but, we'll in, do, yeah. But all seriousness, is that, do you think this is it now? Because when, like, I stupidly am one of these people, whenever we're winning, I quickly go on the Sky app because they live update the table, don't they? And I was like, we're only 6 points off the top six. But
yeah, I don't see the consistency.
Yeah, season's over.
I don't see the consistency because today was a great test for us. I take the point, we've said it a few times, I won't muller it, but the COVID did affect the squad today because we didn't have a full squad available to us. But even so, we had the opportunity today to press on and start to show the kind of consistency that you need to get into the top six. And unfortunately, we haven't seen it all season. I will come back to that point in a second.
I think we're consistently inconsistent. That is our consistent thing. And not just that, like, if we take the COVID injuries out of it, if you actually look at the injuries that we've now got, that takes us away because they're not little injuries. Bennett's always injured, but he's injured again. Leonard's out, he's injured. Mahoney's injured, so it'd be another one to cover you. You know, Ballard.
He's persona non grata, though, isn't he?
Ballard's a big miss. So I've named three players out of your 11. Jed's injured, so that's five.
Yeah,
You're sitting there and you've got five big injuries. Four of them are players that play regularly.
And we mentioned Leonard already. I mean, you know, that's a big loss. It's a big loss because today needed the kind of drive that we've not seen from the midfield. For whatever reason, this midfield don't drive forward in the way that we need. I'm going to read a few. I got a message actually. Do send me direct messages on Twitter, listeners. Don't send me horrible ones, but do send me intelligent ones. This one's from LP, and it is an intelligent one. LP says, Rowett is an absolute fool. I'm sat here after the third goal thinking, how many times will he try to defend a one goal lead and take off attacking players for more defensive ones? Ojo was our outlet to relieve pressure. It's insanity to do. Oh, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I understand some players' performances and decisions can't be Rowett's fault, but he can pick and make subs before we are losing. A frustrating game, what's been an up and down season. I like that message. Thank you, LP, for that. And on a similar note, I've got one. I've picked this off of Twitter. James Dorney, son of legendary defender Alan Dorney from the 70s, my era. He says, I'm not Ojo's biggest fan, Harry, but taking him off today changed the course of that game and our attacking intent. So he's criticising by default there Gary Rowett and his decision-making in that situation. This is a repeat thing, isn't it? This does crop up hell of a lot.
Does this feel substitutions. Like, absolutely, but this is the thing. This was the stick that in the latter days of the prodigal son, that was the stick to beat Harris with. Was to say that we always go negative when we make subs and we try and cling on. It's the same thing repeating itself. When managers start to fear the crowd in terms of if they don't think their approval rating tends to be good at Millwall, they tend to start second-guessing themselves.
I think he knows his own approval rating after the Peterborough game. I think he would have heard that. I don't know what was said today.
I genuinely think if Birmingham sat Bowyer, or somebody else, another job comes on, I think he'll go. And I do, because I think it saves his bacon. And I think he's quite an arrogant man. I've said this before. I genuinely believe that he believes his own height. And I think that he believes he's better than us. And he will leave. And the only way he leaves this job with any kind of credibility in the bank, I think, is to leave without... Sort of, you can't get sacked for one. That's a massive thing for him.
I don't think we're sacked. We're not sacked.
I don't think we're going to sack him. But at the end of the season, he will be happily. He will leave quite happily in the thing and put a sort of public press persona out, like he wanted to go, regardless whether he's offered a new deal or not. I just get that it will be just a parting of the ways. The problem is who do you get in charge? of a team with six centre midfielders, no strikers, because Bradshaw still hasn't signed that contract. your best player's about to leave, depending on whether or not you believe that Tyler Bury's been brought back solely to replace Jed Wallace. Yeah, we're a bit incredible.
And Matt Smith and Pierce are going to play for Millwall's over 35s vets team.
Yeah, probably. We're like Millwall is as a club to support is loads of mediocrity followed by moments of crisis.
Well, welcome to my life, mate. This is my 50th year, Harry.
Sometimes you don't see the doom inbound, right?
If I'd have committed murder, I'd have been out in 10. I've done 50 years, mate, you know?
Yeah. 50 years of this, fucking hell. No wonder you had a heart attack.
Let's take a short break, and I'm going to bounce the boys with my own personal list of top 10s, if you can believe it, listeners, from 2021. We'll be back after these messages.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Hello, listeners. Mike Hayden here. Just returned home from Ashton Gate this afternoon in the end was a frustrating and disappointing result for the Lions against a poor side, let's put it that way. Quite a lot of chances for sort of both sides, I thought, in the game. And, you know, we should have put the game to bed before half time. I thought we were the better side. You know, obviously a bit of a clanger from Bart. Occasionally has those moments. That's why he's not a Premier League goalkeeper. But, you know, I thought we came back really well. It was a superb goal by Bradshaw. An excellent cross from Murray Wallace. And Bradshaw, again, gets in behind and have a great finish. And then another, we split them apart again. Clear penalty and slotted home very nicely by a Phoebe. And then it was up to us to really see the game out. And what was disappointing was that we didn't do it. And it cost us in the end. You know, Hutchinson missed a great header just before the first half whistle. And I think that obviously would have put us 3-1 up and looking more comfortable. Second half, Bristol City changed their shape, brought on two players, and the game opened up massively. It was very end-to-end. And again, you know, the ball just didn't seem to fall for us at times. We just needed that little bit of luck. And the unfortunate thing is, it just fell to Bristol City. And, you know, Vyman got a hat trick and we lost the game. But we definitely didn't deserve to lose. I thought we played okay. I think we probably shut up shop a little bit early, taking off Ojo. I thought Ojo was quite quiet in the first half, but I thought he played well in the second. He was causing them problems, winning free kicks and direct running. But, you know, the minute he took Ojo off and Evans came on, who was really poor, barely passed to a blue shirt, that did cost us. So I thought, you know, I think Rowett tried to see the game out, but the way Bristol City were putting pressure on us, it was going to be hard to do that. We had to score again in that game. And because we didn't, we went on to lose, which was disappointing. I think we've also got to think of it in a way where, you know, it was tough for that side. Obviously, we've had the COVID issues, a really hard-fought win at Coventry, and then pretty much the same side again, having to put out, you know, today. I can't fault the effort of the players. I thought there was good performances in there. I think George Saville arguably put his best performance in this season today. I thought he was superb. You know, and we had some quite good performances in the team, but ultimately individual errors cost us in the end, and probably a poor substitution from Gary Rowett. We've not followed up a win again, and this is why, unfortunately, we're just not quite good enough to get in that top six. And it's happened again. And we should have won today, I think. Certainly not lose. But yeah, very disappointing in the end. But on to the next one. And I hope we've got some more players available for Crystal Palace. Come on, you Lions.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Okay, welcome back. Now then, chaps, I have struggled and squeezed the sponge as hard as I can to find some moments and general concepts from 2021 that are designed to raise the spirits a little bit. So forgive me if I go off on tangents. And as I've got you in front of me, and you can't go yet until I finish this, so I'm gonna thrust these upon you. I tried to do a top 10 list, listeners. Actually, it became quite hard to do a top 10 because there haven't been that many great moments. That's a sad truth. But my first moment of note was back at the end of that strange behind closed doors season, February actually. That was Millwall 4, Sheffield Wednesday 1, behind closed doors. And the reason that I picked out that 4-1 win at home at the Den was it then sparked three successive wins in an 8-game unbeaten streak. And yes, okay, I've written there were indeed 5 draws in that period. This is the level of highlights that I've been able to find from the season. So that's my number one. And I think, you know, last season particularly, he's a streak manager, Gary Rowett. I mean, we had that little bit of decent form to follow, which would be my second moment. But then you have these long periods of draws and losses and kind of going nowhere, kind of drifty sense. And that's been so for a long time. And it really, really stood out as I tried to come up with a top 10 for 2021. I'm ignoring the end of 2020. So three successive wins after that 4-1 win. The other thing I noticed, and I don't know if you boys, I bet you can't even remember that game, that 4-1 win.
Yeah, I can.
You can, won't you? Michael's shaking his head.
Malone scored the Gascoigne-esque goal, didn't he?
Was it in that
I think it was 0-0 at half-time and won 4-1. Or 1-0 down at half-time.
Let's have a look at the Mill history. I might be wrong,
but I think it's that game.
Was that one where he flicked over his head and then...
Yeah.
I remember the goal.
If I was any kind of pro listeners, I've had that lined up as Harry said that, but I'm not any kind of pro.
We can do filler.
Zohor. Zohor penalty. This is the level we're at. It was a Zohor penalty on 39. We were 1-0 down, actually.
There we go.
Past us. And then Zohor's equalised on 39. Then we've got, must be the goal you're meaning, Harry, 68 minutes, Scott Malone. Then a player straight after, I don't know if you remember a bloke called Ben Thompson, he scored on 69. Really? Yeah,
I remember him. He remember him? Right, didn't he?
It's a decent player. Millwall boy, I think. And then Bradshaw, that man again on 19 minutes to make
Bradshaw
it
scoring,
one.
Yeah.
So yeah, there we are. That was the first of my top 10 moments and general concepts that I'm going to pick out for the
general
year.
General concepts. Why does this sound like you're trying to set? You sound like you're like a middle management window salesman trying to sort of talk through this Zoom call.
I was going to do this. New Year's Eve. I was going to do it. I had nothing going on in the afternoon. I thought I might sit down and do this. I just didn't have the energy and I couldn't be asked, listeners, to be quite honest with you. I thought what I'll do is I'll wait till after the game and whoever I've got on the show, Harry and Michael, I'm going to pin this on them and get them to say nice things about it afterwards. So my second moment is March. Again, we're coming towards the end of 2021. A 1-0 win over Middlesbrough. Again, that sparked a three-game winning run that took us towards ninth. The other thing with the Wednesday game, just going back to that, is it took us away from, I think we were quite low in the table when we beat Sheffield Wednesday. I think we were looking at Well, 13th, we've been looking over our shoulders. 16th, we went down to at one point, and even 17th towards the end of 2020. So brilliant. That run took us away from the thoughts of relegation that were starting to nag everyone's, on everyone's shoulders.
I can't see many people buying this compilation DVD, Nick.
No, that's what I call Millwall.
Yeah, now that's what I call Gary Rowett.
That's what I call Rowett. So the second in the hit parade is a 1-0 win over Middlesbrough. That sparked a three-game winning run. It took us to ninth. So we could start to dream, chaps. It was Middlesbrough 1-0, then Rotherham 1-0, and a win at Stoke for 2-1. These are all in the turn of March to April. And we were ninth. And I don't know about you, but you could start to look up at the sixth spot in the table. And that's always a moment where you know what's going to come after that. And that was slamming defeat on slamming defeat after that. So we got beat then by Swansea, draw with Brentford, 4-1, lost by Bournemouth at home, loss at Watford. We beat Bristol. And then that shambles, that awful game that still haunts me slightly. The 6-1 away at Coventry. And it's a game that I've never, I don't know, it kind of lurks in my mind.
Was that the end of your sort of, not support for Gary Rowett, but was that the start? Was that your Waterloo, shall we say?
Waterloo. It was one of those moments where I don't know, I've never seen a ghost, but until you see one, you don't believe in them. Now I started to think, hang on, this bloke really doesn't know what he's doing, really. And I try and put that thought out of my mind every so often. But it was one of those moments that haunts me to this day. Because it was such a poor, limp performance at the end of a season. It did actually have some promise at that point. So that was my second moment, that 1-0 win over Middlesbrough to spark that situation.
I think it was the defeat after those three games that I decided I was done for the season and didn't watch us again.
No, because this was all on iFollows on the computer screen.
I think I made the conscious decision that it was depressing me further during lockdown, and I thought I'd fucking stop watching it. And it was a sane decision. I mean, eight, 9 months on, we're in exactly the same position.
This is it. I mean, if this is the thing here, Michael, because I mean, these descriptions and these moments are horribly familiar because we're still in it, really, aren't we? It's like the pandemic. You know, it's like you can go back to the start of it, and it still feels much the same as it is now. It's part of your life, and this dreariness is part of our life.
Well, we laughed about it earlier when you said about the sort of run of, like, was it eight games where we didn't lose, but yeah, five were draws. Already it was, I mean, up until recently, like the Peterborough game and today's game, there was a stat, I think it was only something like Bournemouth, Fulham and West Brom had lost less games than Millwall.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's brilliant, that's really, really good. And then it's like, but we drew like 17, and it's like, well, we were going back down that road of not winning games again. So it's like you say, it's just that familiar feeling.
It's never ending. So that was my second moment. I've picked out some statistics for the third moment, if you like, because I think in amongst this whole dreary, endless hint of promise, have it taken away from you. Today's, we're talking in the immediate aftermath of just such a thing where we've won on Coventry and we've got beat today at Bristol. So you're forever having something dangled in front of you and taken away. But in amongst that, we've got some really stalwart players, boys. And this is end of 2021 season. For the season, Jed Wallace, 44 appearances, 11 goals and 8 assists in one of the toughest seasons, really, given that it was spectator-free. 11 goals and 8 assists from 44 appearances for Jed. 49 appearances for Bart. And I just put a note, I don't know how many goals and points he's saved. You know, we saw it again today. When he makes an error, it really stands out. And then the twosome, Jake Cooper and Sean Hutchinson, 46 for Jake appearances, 43 for Sean Hutchinson. A couple of goals between them and a few assists. Jed Wallace, Bart Bielkowski, Jake Cooper, Sean Hutchinson, those are names that in 20 years' time, I think people will remember as rocks, as players that have really served Millwall Football Club. Whatever, you know, we don't know what Jed's going to do. He's entitled to look after himself and his family when he moves on. But I don't think anyone can ever query any of those players' commitment to Millwall. And it just struck me, in the midst of a difficult season, they stand out. So there we are. I do have a highlight and I wasn't there for it. And that's the QPR one, the goal to open up the season at Circuit. You were there, Harry, weren't you?
I was there.
Manic by the sounds of it.
So was Mike. Down, you were in the lower, weren't you, Mike?
Yeah. I was down the bottom. Good day. That, do you know what? If you was going to ask us what ours were, that generally was going to be the number one because it was everyone back. I know we're still living in this pandemic, and I know still people are getting unwell when we wish them well and all that. But yeah, that was the first one that you never thought you'd see because of the way the world was going. So that's my personal highlight.
Yeah, it was the day out, being back. That noise, that wall of noise was almost biblical to be in that away end. But even before the game had kicked off, it was like I'm not a religious man. This will not shock many people, but it was. I can only imagine. You know, when you see these people who turn around and, you know, are on the Kool-Aid and they've gone to the cult and they believe. You know, if someone had been selling sort of Lucky Heather, but dipped in real wine.
You'd have bought some that day.
I'd have been in for it because it was,
hand would have gone in pocket. For
oh, it was like a bit in Blues Brothers where, you know, James Brown.
the beam of light comes in. Yeah,
that's what it was. We have
Harry Warren doing backflips outside Westfield.
Yeah, it was a bit like that.
2,500 Millwall in a crowd of 16,157. And I mean, I missed it. Unfortunately, I was away that week, but there we are. But that's probably the highlight, I suppose, if you like. I've picked out the 2-1 win at Sheffield United in October, 19th of October. Sheffield 1, Millwall 2, a 90+2 winner by Jake Cooper. I've still got that picture on my Twitter feed because I just thought it was just one of those wonderful, wonderful away wins that we do get from time to time. We had one in the week and we had one there. And that also marked probably the return of Tom Bradshaw to the fold. Did he score that night? I think he must have done.
Yeah, he did.
So that was the return of Tom Bradshaw, and thankfully his scoring run continues. I've put in there the 3-1 win that we achieved over Birmingham City, and one of my personal highlights, is seeing Lee Bowyer's long face on the big screen at the Den. That's a Millwall moment, you know.
It's a very droopy. From sort of Looney, what is it? Not Looney Tunes, but Hanna-Barbera character, doesn't he? Got that hang-dong dog look. Every time he turns up,
who is there? There was a character, was it? Droopy. Droopy. That's Snoopy. Yeah. I was thinking, I couldn't get Snoopy out of my head.
Yeah, it's Droopy. Yeah,
he does look like Droopy.
He does. He just stands there sort of, I'm really fucking miserable.
I should have included Stoke City, the chaos, the Mill chaos.
Thrived in the chaos, yeah.
So that was on the 26th of October, Mill chaos. Booed off at half-time, cheered off at full-time. And then 3-1 win over Birmingham City, another old-school Lions performance. So two games there, boys, where you can actually call them old-fashioned Millwall home games, where we've turned over bigger and more better-resourced opponents, I suppose. I really like that win up at Coventry. It was a bit of a backs to the wall against all odds quality in midweek. That's another one of my moments. And of course, the debut of Zach Lovelace. Let's hope he does develop on and builds a career at the Den. My final two concepts. I really liked. I want to take my hat off to Millwall for that. The rolling over of the season ticket money from the dead season, the behind closed doors. I'm able to pay for another season ticket this year. I'm ready to go with that. But the fact they rolled forward that credit, Michael, was one of those warm moments where you think, fuck me, yeah, we've got a club here. This is a proper, and it's a hackneyed phrase, the Millwall family, but there are moments that happen where you think, yeah, that's true, that's real. And the financial support that John Berylson gives us, I know that we're running a level of debt that isn't great, but it's much, much better from today's opponents, Bristol City, I think 40 million behind. And that rollover just really took me aback. I think it's one of the big moments of the year in some ways. It's not an immediately exciting thing, but in the long term, it just builds a real kind of goodwill.
Yeah,
I'll take my hat off to the club.
Exactly, because you could have had, let's be brutally honest with you, that you could have had the club who, I'm not saying, because I know they sort of mentioned doing it the year before or wherever it was, or credits or credits here and there, but you could have had some clubs who would have said, oh, we'll do it, but then pull on the heartstrings a bit and go, oh, we said we would do it. However, we know we can't afford to. So dig deep and put your hand in your pocket again. But so the fact that the club knew how much it would hit them financially if they did it, but they still went ahead and did it. I think, like you say, so it's a lovely it is a lovely touch. And like we've said before, when you've got some teams like pre-new owners, Newcastle, who Mike Ashley didn't listen to their fans, Ipswich Town, Harry, like close to where, not too far from where you are, they've never really gotten too well with their supporters clubs and everything like that, have they? They don't feel they're listened to. So to practically give 90% of the fan base free tickets for an entire season again, yeah, really good touch from you all.
I mean, free in a set, they've been paid for, but it's rolled over. I mean, you know, I could tell you, I was going to, they've got the summertime coming up, so I thought, oh, I might try and get to the cricket a bit more this year, you know, go up to Essex. And I went on their website to buy a membership, and I was a member in 2020, and that most of that season didn't happen, and I didn't bother last year. But they were giving discounts, listeners, but only if you'd been a member for 2020 and you'd renewed for the dead season of 2021. They give you an early bird discount. And I just thought, fuck you. You know,
it was
a dead season, you know, and it was such a contrast. I haven't renewed it. I won't now. I'll just buy a ticket on the day, because I thought it was just such a petty move by a club that should be building, a cricket club that should be building links with its fans and spectators, and it just gets it wrong. And I thought Millwall just got that 100% right. Do you agree with that? Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. I think everyone's got to do what they think was right for their own business. I get that. I think knowing cricket people, shall we say, I think they're probably the kind of people, and I may be generally stereotyping here, but fuck it, it's Millwall, so let's do that. They're probably middle class, and they probably don't miss the money, Nick. Whereas,
let's
be honest. Millwall is in two of the most deprived areas of London. Its fan base are working class, and the working fan base would have turned around and sold them up their bollocks. And you know, the most important player, shall we say, to have on side at Millwall is the Millwall fans, and they done right by the Millwall fans because, as I've said before, and I'll say it again, the synergy when we are all pulling in the same direction, singing from the same in book, is what makes our club special and what makes the Den our place to go and so on and so forth. So they've done the right thing, you know, but that's, you know, I'd expect them to do the right thing, but I've been wrong about people doing the right thing before. So you've got to applaud people for doing the right thing, as weird as that sounds, because some people don't do the right thing.
No. Well, hats off to Millwall. I'm not particularly slagging Essex County Cricket Club. I'm only talking about the difference between 40 quid and, you know, I don't know. Just, sometimes petty things make a big difference, I think.
It's the principle of the thing. I totally understand where you come from. You sound like a woman taking a blouse back to Primark or something, mate. That she's seen going the south. That's what it sounds like.
I think I'm going to call it my list of top moments. I've got top scorer Tom Bradshaw now, 6 goals and 1 assist. But on the back of today's performance, I think I'm going to call it quits at the club, rolling over the money. Big thank you to Harry and to Michael for joining me so soon in the aftermath.
Can we preview the Palace thing?
Oh, the Palace game. Yeah, we weren't going to. Yeah, no, go for it, mate. Yeah.
What do we think everyone's going to happen? What do we think is going to happen?
I think there's going to be live TV coverage. There's going to be the most almighty boo when they take the knee. That's going to cause shockwaves around football. I think probably someone somewhere, there'll be lots of apologies for bad language. And I hope you're not enjoying the football. And as you said, you're right, Harry, they'll come up with some banner. They'll have a banner produced that's going to say something stupid. And football-wise, I don't know. I mean, they're a decent team, Crystal Palace. I don't like to say that. It hurts. But they're a decent team. They're a decent team. If we can field our strongest side, and if the Den will be on board, but in all of its glory, for better and for worse, you know, hopefully we've still got a football club by the time Saturday at 5 o'clock comes around. What do you think, Mike?
I'm just thinking about Patrick Vieira sat there in the away dugout with Lurch next to him, thinking, I never had this at Highbury or the San Siro, did I?
No, he didn't.
What do you think is going to happen, Larry? How do you see it, mate?
I think we're going to get fucking battered. I think we're going to get murdered. I think we'll get beat about 4-1. I'd be very happy if we don't, by the way. But they were dog shit against West Ham. I watched them last night and I was trying to, because they've not got Gallagher or Sahara. They're two best players by far. And I just was watching. I was like, oh, seeing all the good things that West Ham done that affected them. I was like, we don't run at teams like that. We don't do that. We don't do that. So it's going to be, the difference is I'd expect us normally to go 4-4-2, batting down the hatches and play like
go Millwall.
But I don't think Gary Rowett's
That kind of player,
that kind of guy that would read the, he's not very good at reading the room, shall we say. If you read the room and gave them what they want, like this is an occasion to go, fuck it, give them what they want, right? That is it, right? But he won't do that, and we could be 3 or 4 nil down at fucking half time, and you know, all it takes is for, look, let's not get it wrong.
Give us some Millwall chaos, Gary. That's all we're asking, give it a go.
The thing is we've got Clive. I've always wanted Clive Tyldesley to commentate on Millwall. I've always wanted that voice to go over Millwall. And all I can hear in my background is he going, it's very disappointing. That's all I can hear. And I'm very worried about that. But look, it is what it is. It's Palace. I've always wanted us to get a big draw. Obviously, being from the other side of the water, my hated team is West Ham United Football Club, followed by Palace.
I don't think you're alone there, Harry. I don't think you're alone, mate.
So, some people hate Palace more, weirdly. And
I don't like Crystal Palace, but I get the historical rivalry with West Ham.
Palace are in my top three as well. I'm quite looking forward to this one.
They're just an annoying
you're
club.
On the fence. You still haven't said whether or not you think we're going to get battered or not.
I think.
1-0 Millwall, Alex Pearce header, 89th minute.
It depends, I think, how much Crystal Palace wants it, because I think they do, like all Premier League clubs now, they disdain the FA Cup ever so slightly. So they may not put 100% in. It will be a hostile atmosphere. They won't be as used to that as they like to think they've got the Holmesdale fanatics, whatever they call themselves. But I think Millwall is a different level of sustained abuse.
I think they're very much, they're very blitzkrieg. We're sort of more the Somme. Attritional bombardment, and they're sort of like rolling banners out and pyro and.
It's going to be a clash of cultures. Let's put it that way.
Clash of cultures is a good word. I think that could be Sunday's headline.
Clash of cultures
in the Sun. Clash of culture.
There we are. I've shut down my iPad, boys. Thank you for taking time out. I really appreciate it. We did speak straight after the game, so it's quite hard to give two considered analysis. But we thought we'd done quite a good job today. So, big thank you to Michael Avery. Thank you, mate.
No problem at all.
And to the man himself, Harry. Thank you, mate.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
And to you too, dear listeners. Welcome to 2022. Let's hope we've still got Millwall FC surviving into next Sunday. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.